first to visit to the strange and wonderful world of neurologist Oliver Sacks. Sacks is famous for his stories of people with brain disorders, from Parkinson's disease to autism, in books like Awakenings, Hallucinations, and The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat. He explores neurological mysteries. For instance, how powerfully some of us respond to music. How is it that a song can activate parts of the brain that language can't even touch? In his book Musicophilia, Sacks writes about people who were transformed by music. He tells Steve Paulson about one of his patients.
Tony was a surgeon in his early 40s, very robust and athletic and extroverted, with very little interest in music. And one day, this was in 1993, he was on the phone. It was an outside phone. A storm approached. A bolt of lightning flew out from the phone, hit him in the face, gave him a cardiac arrest, and along with this, an out-of-body experience. He was resuscitated, and he seemed pretty much himself, except 2 or 3 weeks later, he got what he called a sudden, insatiable passion to hear piano music, and then to play piano music, and then to compose music. And in the course of about 48 hours, he really became transformed. He became possessed by music. That was his term. He started getting up at 3 in the morning, and he got a piano. He got a piano teacher. He learned to transcribe. He was at music when he came back from his surgery. He said his wife wasn't best pleased. And basically, this has continued.
And there was nothing in his background that would suggest this love of piano music.
Really, very little, either on the musical side or, for that matter, on what he likes to call the spiritual side, because he now feels that this was a providential event, a sort of a divine intervention, and that, in a sense, the music comes from heaven and he has a mission to bring it to earth. And so there was also a certain change in character and a sort of a mystical element crept in.
You write about other cases where music is profoundly therapeutic. For instance, you have worked with people with Parkinson's and Alzheimer's diseases, and these people may not be able to talk easily, they may not even be able to move very well, but often those problems seem to disappear when they listen to music or play music.
Yeah, well, this is where things started for me as a physician, and more than 40 years ago when I saw the patients whom I later described in Awakenings, and these people were almost transfixed with extremely severe Parkinsonism, catatonia, these sleepy sickness people. But music could liberate them in the most remarkable way, and they could dance, they could sing, they could move normally, they could think normally while the music lasted. Music can just have an amazing effect in recalling deeply demented people to life, and music has its special uses in aphasia and people who've lost language, because even though they may not be able to speak, they're usually able to sing and often to recover the lyrics of a song.
Well, that's fascinating. So you're suggesting then that the part of our brain that deals with language is a different part than deals with singing, for instance.
Oh yeah, absolutely. This was really discovered, you know, right back in the 1860s, when it was found that aphasic children could sing. And even though there might be damage in the left hemisphere of the brain causing the loss of language, singing seemed to be associated with the right hemisphere of the brain, although in general, there's no music center in the brain. There's 20 or 30 different systems or networks in the brain involved in listening to music or imagining music or reacting to music. And I think this is why music is so robust, and even when speech may be lost, you know, other parts of the brain are still there.
Well, you say something astonishing in your book, that neuroscientists can actually spot a professional musician just by looking at the image of their brain.
Oh, yeah, I was very fascinated by this, and I wouldn't have believed it had I not sort of seen this myself. This is beautiful work, especially done by a man called Gottfried Schlaug, and he found that in many different areas, in the corpus callosum, this great bridge between the two hemispheres, in the auditory parts of the brain, and in the motor parts of the brain, and in the visuospatial parts of the brain, there was a real enlargement of gray matter in musicians' brains. And this is sometimes visible to the naked eye, so that although you can't look at a brain and say, that's the brain of a mathematician or a visual artist, you can look at a brain and say, this is probably the brain of a musician.
So do you think this different brain anatomy is something that is changed as people hone their talent for music, or is it something that some people are just born with?
I'm sure both. And sometimes it's difficult to tease out because people who are naturally very gifted are likely to have, you know, intensive early musical training. But there have been studies with people who've had, say, a year of intensive violin training, the Suzuki method, looking at their brains before and after a year. And you can see very clearly the changes which have occurred.
You write about another remarkable case study, the English musician Clive Wearing. Explain what happened to him.
Clive was a very gifted musician and musicologist, pioneer in Renaissance music, when in 1985 he had a devastating brain infection, a herpes encephalitis, which especially destroyed some of the memory systems in his brain. So he developed a profound amnesia, so much so that he would lose everything in a few seconds. If you came in the room, he would greet you. 10 seconds later, you'd be a stranger, and he'd greet you again. And along with this, there was a loss of many memories from his past life. A great deal of his autobiography was gone. So he had lost, you know, what neurologists call event memory or episodic memory. He'd lost much of his knowledge of the world, but his ability to perform music and even to conduct a choir or an orchestra at a masterly level was absolutely unchanged.
So he could remember those musical pieces. Somehow those memories came back to him, the musical memories.
Well, let's put it this way. The power of musical performance, the music came back to him. He might, you know, if you showed him a Bach fugue, you know, the printed page, he'd say, never seen it before. But if you just start him on the first note, he would play the whole fugue perfectly, and then in some amazement discover that he knew it, so that he possessed a huge memory of which he was unaware, which is sometimes called implicit memory. And when he was performing music, improvising at the organ, singing, conducting, he seemed utterly himself and, you know, gifted, charming, full of sensitivity and intelligence. Seconds later, he'd have no memory of this and he'd be confused and disoriented and frightened. And so that there was this day and night difference between the two Clives.
That's neurologist Oliver Sacks talking with Steve Paulson about his book, Musicophilia, Tales of Music and the Brain.